What is going on, everyone? I am Jack Allen with another episode of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. Soundboards left and right. So, first, go follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Kojak Podcast. You can support the show, Patreon, Venmo, and you can just DM me if you can't find it, but I got it all on my link tree. Yeah, so you can support me all those places. If you want to leave a review, that would be great. I'd be honored and thrilled if you could leave a review for me because, you know, that always helps and it just means the world to me. So yeah, go do that. Today's episode, though, Brandon Tubbs joins us again. He's got his own podcast out, and I want to say it's Just One Man, and he's an awesome guy. Brandon was on the show 2 times earlier talking Revelations, and we finished the Revelations prophecy tonight. Holy heck. And go listen to the first 2, but you don't have to understand what's going on here. It is literally insane and awesome, and dude, it's amazing show. Freaking amazing show. So go check it out. Go check it out. And this one, though, guys, like, my mind is melted. I was sitting on the edge of my seat the whole time. Brandon is such an awesome guy, guys. Go follow. He's going to be on again anytime. And he's welcome at any time. So awesome. Ah, I love him. He's great. So go follow him. I'll put his handles in the show notes. Go listen to his podcast. If you're like me, you're a Christian, you know nothing but the bare minimum of the Bible. Brandon explains it. He doesn't laugh at my questions that may are probably stupid to most people that are good Christians. And that's it. Yeah. So thanks for listening, guys. I was going to put this out on Monday, but this was such a good episode. I'm putting it out probably tomorrow morning. So I am Jack Allen from Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. Support the show if you can. Financially, awesome. If not, leave a review, and I means just as much to me as a financial donation, guys. Share the show, whatever. Tell me a comment, good or bad. Leave a review. Don't be too hard on me. I do my best. All right, but if you have some constructive criticism, I usually am in a good mood and can handle it. So fire away. But I love you guys. You're just such, we've been getting an awesome community on the live streams. Dude, we have about 15 people and so many amazing people, guys. Go check it out. Join the show when I do my live streams. Usually, always Wednesday at 8:30. But sometimes I do a few, like 3 a week or whatever, 2 or 3 a week, based on how much Liv Allen's working. And yeah. So guys, we're working on next episode, feminism, the lie that is feminism, and that's it. All right, guys, keep making decisions that better ourselves. Don't be too down in the world. Revelation, this podcast actually made me feel like good, dude. All I have to do is believe in Jesus, which I do, and I'm going to be in his gosh darn army, and dude, we are going to wreck Lucifer and his demons. Find out why. Oh, and the one fact that Brandon wasn't able to add on the show. So the New Jerusalem that he's going to talk about, that's going to come down from heaven for Christ's reign. And its dimensions are 15,000 or maybe like 150,000 by 150,000 by 150,000 square feet tall, wide. And what does that make? It makes a cube. Boom, dude. What the symbolism of that means, I have no idea. But he forgot to mention that fact and he wanted me to tell you. So that's it, guys. Love you all. God bless. Better yourself. Love your family. F the politicians. F the grifters. We're going to win. Good will overcome evil. Much love. God bless. I'm Jack Allen at Kojak Podcast. Follow me there. Peace. All right. What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. I am Jack Allen. Thanks for joining us on our Bible Study Friday with my boy Brandon. Today is Revelations Part 3. I'm excited. Brandon, how the hell are you?
Man, I'm doing great. Doing great. Nice, thanks for having me for Part 3.
I love it. I love it. Dude, this is like the the cheat, the Cliff Notes version of reading the Bible. Though I always say I need to start reading, but you're my biggest teacher so far, so I appreciate it.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Last episode, trying to get through the letters to the seven churches can be a little rough.
No, dude, it was great.
Because it doesn't, you like get this awesome intro and then you get a few chapters and you're like, why are we even looking at this? Like, I want to get to the cool stuff. Like, tell me about the dragons and like the Battle of Armageddon. Like, I'm not worried about these letters. So, yeah.
No, dude, you're doing it perfectly. So first, I know I want to get, so we talked about, we finished the letters last time.
Yeah.
We talked about some, tell us what we, the cliff notes of what we talked about the first two, just in case someone, didn't see it or whatever.
Yeah. So the super cliff notes is like John's on an island by himself and Jesus appears to him and tells him to pretty much write down everything that he sees. So he gets tasked with writing the things that are, the things that he, like the things before these, which is chapter one, and then two and three, the letters to the churches, which when you reflect that back to the book of Daniel in the Old Testament, you understand the age of the Gentiles and that we're living in the last letter to the churches there. And then, you start with chapter four and five, kind of set up chapter six and the rest of it, which jumps into the prophecy part of the end times and things like that. So it's really not until you get into chapter six that you get a lot of that stuff. So we ended with the letters in chapter three and ready to jump into the prophecy stuff, the cool stuff, as everybody
all says. Right, yeah. Dude, prophecies. All right, so start us off. So yeah, you know where to start. You got it all planned.
I hope so. So the chapter four and five, they really set up chapters 6 through 19, and that is the tribulation period. So the book of Daniel, we learn that tribulation is the 7-year period that is meant for the nation of Israel as, their last 77. And so it's a 7-year period, tribulation is, and it's really broken into two different parts. So you have the first half of it that's 3.5 years, and then you have this moment between them that's called mid-tribulation. But there's a lot of stuff, like there's 4 chapters in Revelation that are dedicated to this, just this moment that separates these 2 3.5-year periods.
Wow.
And then you have the remaining 3.5-year period after that. And so really for like chapters 4 and 5, John is taken into the throne room and he gets to see a lot of this cool stuff. One of the things that he sees are these 24 elders that are in there. And for us, that is like, that's a really like evidence for us in showing that we get raptured at some point, because elders are always depicted as human beings in the Bible. And it says that there's 24 of them. And obviously throughout church history, there's been more than 24 elders in the church.
Yeah.
And so in like previous episodes, we talked about the number 7 representing 100%. So you would think that you would see like 7 elders in there to represent everything.
Yeah.
But biblically, the number 12 represents government or leadership. So like the 12 tribes of Israel, like you had the 12 tribes that governed all of Israel.
Right.
You had the 12 disciples that were with Jesus. We have 12 months that govern our whole year. So that number 12 really represents that. And when you double a number, it really just means to like emphasize it or make the concept behind that complete. So 12 doubled is 24. So that's why you see the 24 elders, or why John saw the 24 elders in there and wrote about them.
That's crazy, dude, how you like these numbers, the, I don't know if it's like gematria or, but how it has even this much influence, like, meaning in the Bible. It's just why it's not, I don't know. It's just something interesting.
Yeah. I mean, like we've talked before and we'll talk about a little bit again tonight about the number six representing the number of, you know, fallen man, and Christ is on the cross for 6 hours, you know, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. So again, like you see, like you get this representation and this symbolism of, you know, what that means. And I guess for me as a believer, like seeing that intentionality and the meaning behind all of that, it just furthers to let you know that it is part of the plan. Like it wasn't by mistake or by accident or anything like that.
Yeah.
So there's a, like before tribulation starts and just more evidence that
and what's tribulation? Sorry.
Yeah. Tribulation is just this, it's the 7 year period.
Okay.
Of events that happen on earth. It's the last seven of the 77s that the book of Daniel talks about. And that is for like the punishment of Israel for entering into a covenant with God. And then they pretty much broke that covenant.
Okay.
So they like willingly said, yeah, hey, we're cool to go into this. And then, you know, they broke the covenant. And so they had to have, I mean, they had consequences for that. Which last time we talked about the age of the Gentiles, which is good for us because I'm not Jewish and I don't think you're Jewish either. So had they not done that, then it wouldn't have opened the door for Gentile people like us to be able to receive the message, to be able to spend, you know, eternity with God. So, you know, that's really great news for us that they didn't do any of that stuff. There's a part in 1 Thessalonians where it talks about us being caught up. And what's really cool is that phrase that Paul uses in that book, caught up. If you translate like the literal translation in Latin Vulgate, is the term is raptura, which becomes rapture in French.
Huh.
And that's the term that we use now. It's saying like we'll be raptured. So when we die, you know, because God had put a curse on the ground and our bodies from the ground. So, you know, we're two things. We're a body and we're a soul or a spirit. So our body just stays here and angels escort our souls into the throne room. But if you're here at this moment of rapture, then you're just immediately taken into the throne room. And I guess the ironic part in like the Jewish people not believing that Jesus was the Messiah, but when you look at the festivals and traditions that they have now, so the rapture is this picture of this feast, and it fits between the Feast of Pentecost, which we know Pentecost was when the disciples received the Holy Spirit. And on the other side of that is the feast, the Yom Kippur, which is a picture of the second kingdom. And so this Feast of Trumpets fits in between the two of those, which would be the rapture. So even for like Jewish festivities and history that they do, like the rapture is still there between, you know, the Pentecost and for the second kingdom coming. So I always find that a little ironic, I guess you could say.
And the throne room's like in heaven. That's what, when you say throne room.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, okay. Yeah, the throne room is in heaven. And so John is in there and like, he's seeing all this stuff. Chapter 4 is giving like this depiction of everybody that's in there. And that's how we can know that either you've been raptured or like you've died and your soul is there. And then,
so rapture is a good thing. If I was raptured, right? Or no?
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's, you know, like there's this trumpet, which is a like military order, is how that's described. And Christ doesn't come all the way to the earth. Like he comes down in a cloud kind of halfway. And if you're still alive and you're a believer, then your soul is immediately just escorted into the throne room.
Wow. Or, there's going to be a long line in there.
Yeah. yeah. So, well, so we joke. So the church that we go to, we always do an Easter service off campus somewhere. And like they were talking about, you know, making sure that from a communication and marketing standpoint that we let people know what had happened. I joked and said, we could just put like a note on the door that just says, you know, if you're reading this, the rapture has happened and you should be worried if you're still here. My idea did not get.
They didn't find it funny.
Yeah,
I think it's funny. So
I thought it would have been hilarious for people to see that.
So they're in the throne. So in the, Jesus comes down halfway. I don't mean to keep interrupting you.
No, you're good. You're good. So chapter 5, you know, is focused on, like, it starts off and it's focused on God the Father holding, it says, like, a book. But, like, when you translate that, it's a scroll, and you wonder what this scroll is. It says that nobody is worthy to open this scroll, but that there's writing on the front and the back of it. And that's a clue as to like how we can know what this scroll is. So back then, like only certain legal documents would have had writing on both sides of them. One of the documents that would have done that would have been a land deed. And so when land was sold or awarded in Israel, a deed was drawn up describing like what those terms would have been. Okay. And then like some of the details would have been written on the outside of that, because like, let's say it was between me and you had deeded me some land for a certain period of time, but then maybe a couple of years from now, we both forgot what it was. Well, if a magistrate opens up the scroll to read what the details are, then that like signifies that that is done. So if you had deeded me land for, let's say, 10 years, but 4 years in, we both forgot what was happening and a magistrate opened it up, then that ends our agreement. We would have to make a new agreement.
Wow. Okay.
From that standpoint.
Got it.
And we learn that this scroll, it has 7 seals on it. So again, we go back to what the number 7 means, being like 100% or complete or whatever. So this thing is completely sealed. And you would think, being in the throne room where God is, for it to say that, you know, nobody was found worthy to open this scroll, the term worthy, it doesn't mean good enough. It actually means appropriate.
Okay.
So then when it talks about Jesus coming forward to be able to open the scroll, you have to think about, this is a land deed between Israel and God. So who's the one person that could step in kind of with an unbiased opinion to be able to both represent both mankind and represent God? Well, Jesus is God, but he also took on human form when he came to earth as Jesus. So he's like the person that can like step in and be this moderator between the two of them. And he even says that he overcame the world, meaning that he defeated the ruler of this world, which is Satan, and he did that by his death and resurrection, because that's Satan's only weapon against us is death. And Christ is the one that came. He died, and he was dead for 3 days, because that was their tradition. You had to be dead for 3 days, because they would start like wrapping somebody up 2 days later, and all of a sudden they pop up, and it's like, oh, you weren't really dead. You were just like, kind of dead. So 3 days was like their deal. Yeah, so, you know, Jesus dies on a Thursday, and he's put in the tomb before the sun goes down, and then he's there, and then when the ladies come back to finish the embalming process, because they didn't have time to do that on Sunday, he was already gone. All right. So, you know, he's the only person that died and then turned around and like came back and he was there. Now, I mean, he resurrected people like Lazarus. And even when he died, it says like tombs were opened and some Old Testament saints came out, but unfortunately those people had to die again. Like Jesus never died again once he was resurrected. So Jesus has the He has the scroll that has the seven seals on it. And so he has to open the scroll. He has to break of the seals. And that is really like what tribulation is all about. Like from Revelation on past that point is about Jesus opening this scroll. And because there's seven seals on it, then like it's going to take a period of time. Now, most people, they're like, well, when is this going to happen? And even the apostles, like they asked Jesus, well, when is this going to happen? And it's funny because Jesus even threw in a question to them that they didn't ask. You know, they said, when will these things take place? What are the signs of your second coming? And what are the signs of the end of the age of the Gentiles that we're in now? And Jesus even added, he was like, hey, you forgot to ask, what are not the signs that is there? So Jesus said that, you know, there will be people that will mislead you, saying that they are him and that the time is near. Like you'll hear rumors of wars and disturbances, but he said those are not signs. Those are things that have to take place, but they're not signs. So he starts to answer their question with what are the signs? And from where we talked before, you know, I mean, the book of Daniel being like called the preface to the book of Revelation. So Jesus tells them that the signs for us to look for are nations will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. In various places, there will be famines and earthquakes. And then he says, but these things are merely the beginning of birth pangs. You and I have never had a kid, but we know we are familiar with birth pangs. Like they're painful. They're usually mild at first. They increase in severity and they repeat. They increase in frequency as they repeat. And at the end, it leads to new life, right?
Yes.
So just those three things that Jesus said, let's go ahead. I mean, when he says nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom, like you're talking about world wars. Well, World War I, 88% of the world participated in that. In World War II, 95% of the world participated in that. When you talk about, he mentioned famine. So if you just look back through recent history, I mean, even like some industrialized nations, like they've begun to experience food shortages. I mean, look at the last couple of years. Food prices are up. Supplies are starting to go down. Yeah.
Right.
You know, all of these inventories of grocery stores, they're suppliant on this supply. Jesus, the third thing that he said was earthquakes. I mean, you can look at the USGS website and look at the trends for earthquakes worldwide.
Damn, dude.
I mean, there's been a 43% increase of a steady pattern since the 1900s.
It's climate change, though, dude.
It's climate change. That's what it is. So before tribulation can begin, we're given 9 total signs that kind of lets us know that this is getting ready to start. So Jesus gives us the world wars, the famines, and the earthquakes. A couple of weeks ago, we had talked about the church itself experiencing apostasy, which is just the abandonment of their religious beliefs. You know, with the seventh letter to the church, where, you know, he was like, I would rather you be hot or cold instead of lukewarm. Where people go to church and because they hang out with Christian people and act like Christian people, they think that they're Christian people and other people think that they are, but in reality, they're not. Mm-hmm. So we have those signs as well. And then in the book of Daniel, the dreams that he interpreted, Daniel said that there would be 10 kings ruling at the end. Okay, so 10 rulers or nations, 10 ruling nations or whatever, and that a covenant would be signed that would allow Israel to come back into the city and to begin their sacrifices again.
That's a sign.
Okay. The rapture, so the church, us being removed,
yeah,
that's also a sign. The last two signs, those come from the book of Ezekiel. So Ezekiel says that the people of Israel, they will be regathered from where they were scattered from, which would make sense because if there's a covenant, then they can regather, they can start to make sacrifices again. And we're also told that a mysterious Old Testament character will return to Israel before the tribulation. Wow. And Malachi says that that would be Elijah. I mean, if you remember Elijah and Elisha, you know, Elijah, it was just the chariots of fire came down and took him. Like, he didn't die. He was escorted away, right, which makes sense because if he's going to come back before the tribulation starts, I mean, this mysterious way that his life ended, you know, gives good evidence for why that happened because he's going to come back. So we have all of these nine signs. And really, if we look at those, I can count five of them that have already been fulfilled or are in the process of being fulfilled. So really what we're left with is the 10 kings coming to power, the church being removed, so the rapture happening and us being gone, Elijah coming back, and then, of course, the final sign is this covenant itself with Israel, allowing them to start making sacrifices again.
What does that mean? Like the, how they would sacrifice the goat and stuff like that, or the sheep or whatever?
Yeah. So for them, like they can't enter into the temple. They have the priests that are at the temple. They would go to the priests and have the priests go before God before them. So the priest would go into the intervail, into the tabernacle, and they would, you know, put the blood on the incense altar and make the sacrifices and stuff for them. So a covenant being signed, allowing them to start to do that again in Jerusalem, where the, you know, temple and stuff was in Jesus's time. Like that's the very final thing that will happen for them to be able to do that. And then that kicks off tribulation. That kicks off this 7-year period with a lot of stuff happening. And again, you know, tribulation itself is even broken into three parts. We get the first half of it in chapter 6-9. We get the, even though that mid-tribulation point is very brief, again, like chapters 10-15 cover this little brief period because there's a lot of things that happen. And then the second half gets covered in chapters 16-19.
Okay.
So tribulation starts off. I'm sure you've heard of the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
Damn, dude. Now we're getting even crazier.
There's only one horseman. There's four horses, but there's only one horseman.
No way. Really?
Yeah. It's the same person. So when, and so we're talking about the seals. So we go back to the scroll with the seven seals. So here's what's going to confuse a lot of people is the seventh seal on the scroll is the seven trumpet judgments.
Okay.
Okay. The seventh trumpet judgment are the seven bowl judgments. Seven. Okay. Seven. Are you confused yet?
Already.
Already. Yeah. So so you have the seven seals, but that seventh seal contains the seven trumpets, and the seventh trumpet contains the seven bowls.
It's like a Russian nesting doll.
Yeah. So a lot of people, they're like, okay, well, this thing happens, and then this thing happens, and then this thing happens. But in a lot of it, it's a lot of things are continuing in the background as other judgments are continuing to happen. Okay. It's not like there's a start and stop for every single one of them.
Got it.
Like the 144,000 that are set aside, you know, they continue to be, and people that believe like they're martyred, them being martyred, like that continues throughout the whole period, even though it's only mentioned one time. So the very first seal, that's the white horse, and the horse, the white horse, like that just represents like a picture of authority, of ruling authority. Because when Christ comes back, he's on a white horse. So the horse is just the picture of that. And that is the, so for here, the first seal, that's the arrival of the Antichrist. Okay, he brings threats of war because he just has a bow. He doesn't have an arrow. Like, what good is it to bring a gun to a fight if you don't have any ammo? So he just has a bow. So he's just bringing threats of war, but he's establishing that he does have some authority or political pull, if you will. And then after that, the second horse, the red horse, that is when the war takes place. So that represents a world war. Okay, so the Antichrist, it's granted to take peace from the earth. It says men will slay one another. A great sword is given to him. It's talking about the Antichrist, and what do world wars result in? Obviously death.
Right.
So then the third seal gets broken. That's represented by a black horse. We're talking about famine and hyperinflation. I mean, we're talking about the effects of this world war that just happened. Okay. Right. So, I mean, 100% of the world is involved in this. You know, thinking about if inflation and famine being bad now, like it's going to be exponentially worse then. It's going to lead to global starvation, which is also going to result in death. So you have war resulting in death. You have famine and hyperinflation leading to starvation that results in death. And then the fourth seal, it says it's a pale green horse. And it says he who sat on it is named Death, and Hades is following him. We got to remember death is a condition and Hades or hell is a place. So it says authority is given to them over one fourth of the earth to kill with the sword, with famine, pestilence, wild beasts, and unbelievers go to hell as a result of death. So the fourth seal brings whoever's left after these first two, like a fourth of them are going to be killed from that.
Damn.
So that's just the first four judgments. And you know, they're obviously connected together as in a group, which makes sense. We've been talking about numbers. So the number four in scripture represents the earth. So these first four judgments, they are designed to look like earthly events, not necessarily heavenly judgments.
Wow. Love
so
it.
So then when we get to the fifth seal, it says, again, this is John talking. So he's talking about like underneath the altar, he sees these souls of those who have been slain because of the word. So the focus goes from earth back into heaven. And we know altars are a place of sacrifice. So for there to be one in heaven tells us this is a place of sacrifice. And what he's seeing is he's seeing the souls of believers that die during tribulation. So they're called tribulation saints. So you have your Old Testament saints. You have your church saints, which is the period that we live in now. And then you have these people that will be martyred during tribulation. They're called tribulation saints.
So the tribulation saints, they're ones that had obviously were non-believers, right? Because they didn't get taken up. So maybe they like found faith during this. Is that why?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So in chapters 4 and 5, when we're talking about everything in the throne room, it says all of the spirit was in the throne room. So we know none of the spirit is remaining on earth at that time. But then as chapter 5 shifts focus from God the Father and the Spirit to just Jesus, it says the spirit then returns to the earth. And there's 144,000 that have been set aside. They receive a mark from God that protects them and keeps them safe. And they are the ones that then begin to share the message with people on earth during tribulation. So interesting fact about those. So this persecution with them happens just in the background throughout all of it. Now, when we talk about the 12 tribes of Israel, it's always interesting because Joseph isn't mentioned very often. If you remember, Joseph was the one that had the cool coat. His brothers beat him up. Okay. He's not mentioned very often when you talk about the 12 tribes of Israel, but his two sons are, because Jacob brought them in before he died. So it's always interesting when you're reading through the Old Testament, look for the tribe that is left out. And that kind of tells you a lot about what's happening. So when it talks about, when it like describes like 12,000 people from this tribe and this tribe and this tribe. The tribe that gets left out is the tribe of Dan. And okay. The tribe of Dan is the tribe that first exposed Israel to idol worship.
No way. Okay. So it's,
as you could say, a coincidence that nobody from their tribe gets listed in this 144,000. Like 12,000 get picked out of every tribe of Israel except for Dan.
Huh.
So with the sixth seal, it says that there's this huge earthquake, that the sun becomes black. It says black as sackcloth made of hair, and the whole moon becomes like blood, and stars from the sky fall. So we know, like, I mean, this is just supernatural stuff that's happening right here.
Yeah,
right. Like, unlike anything we've ever seen before, the stars falling, like, you know, would be a meteor shower, and the sun not shining, the moon being blood red. I mean, just think of some of the effects on Earth from the sun not shining.
Yes.
More being famine. There. Yeah. And so then, you know, then it goes into and it lists all the tribes. So you get your infamous 144,000 of tribulation. And, you know, I had a buddy one time and he was like, oh, a friend of mine, you know, he told me that, you know, I would be one of those people, a part of the 144,000. And I'm like, oh, interesting. I didn't know that you were Jewish, because those 144,000 are coming from like the tribes and it's going to be Jewish people. So I didn't realize that you were, you know, you were Jewish, but that's cool, man. It's, you know,
damn.
So again, you know, the tribe of Dan gets left out, and then the seventh seal, and that goes into the seven trumpet judgments. Now, again, this is still like, we're still in the first 3.5 years of tribulation where all of this stuff,
we're not even full happening. Blown yet.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. Wait till like mid tribulation and then the end. So the trumpet judgments, they're split between impacting the physical earth and impacting the physical bodies of humanity that are here. And so the first three trumpets, they bring devastation to the earth or what remains of it. And life gets like really, really hard. And then the second three, they make life just miserable for people that are there. And they're actually called the woe judgments, because woe is the Bible's word for eternal condemnation. So these three judgments, they're like a preview of eternal judgments. And the reason why they use trumpets is because back then, trumpets were an instrument used for warning. All right, so the first trumpet, so we're on the seventh seal, trumpet one, is it says hail and fire mixed with blood is thrown to earth. And it says a third of the earth, a third of the trees, and all the green grass is burned up.
An umbrella won't save you with that.
It will not. So I'll give you a preview of where this is going.
Yeah.
Biblically, like Israel, think of Israel as the center. And me knowing where Revelation is going, everything is being set up for this battle between Israel and Babylon.
Huh.
So when it says that a third of the earth, third of the trees, again, it could just be a coincidence, but North and South America make up a third of the landmass on earth, and they're also directly opposite of Jerusalem.
Wow, dude.
So I'm not saying that the third of the earth that's going to get burned up is North and South America. I'm just saying it's very coincidental that they make up a third of the landmass.
And that's also crazy.
On the opposite side of the earth of Jerusalem, which is where the final battle is going to be. So we know that whatever this third is, it doesn't affect Jerusalem and Babylon because they have to be there. That's trumpet one. Trumpet two, it says a great mountain burning with fire is thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood, a third of the sea creatures die, and a third of the ships are destroyed. So also think of these trumpets as like being very similar to the plagues in Egypt. But again, if we talk about going back to birthing pains, like increasing in intensity for that, So as the Nile River turned to blood, here we see this great mountain. And again, that would have been something supernatural because John would have known like what a meteor or volcano or something looked like. And those also don't turn water into blood. So this supernatural, like great mountain comes and turns all this water to blood. And again, could just be a coincidence, but the Pacific Ocean is a third of the water and is also directly opposite of Jerusalem.
Wow.
So I guess for me, like right here, two trumpets in, like North, South America, you know, and then affects the Pacific Ocean.
We're in a horrible spot then. We better get out there on the first try.
Well, I mean, hey, we'll be raptured if yes. you're a believer. So yeah. we won't all be right. here.
Good.
Anyway, we'll be watching it from the throne room.
Oh, no, that, all right. Sweet.
So then the third trumpet, it says a star named Wormwood. Well, anytime you talk about like a fallen star that's given a name, fallen stars are angels, fallen angels are demons. So this is a demon named Wormwood. Wormwood means bitter. So this bitter demon falls into a third of the rivers and the springs. So with the first three trumpets, you have a third of the land, a third of the salt water, and a third of the fresh water that have all been impacted.
Right, they're gone.
From that. Now the fourth trumpet comes and it says a third of the sun, third of the moon, third of the stars are struck so that they're darkened and they don't shine. So for a 24-hour period, there's just this total 8-hour blackout every single day. That is there. Now, I mean, I live out in the middle of nowhere, so when the power goes out, like it is incredibly creepy out here because of how dark that it is. So when you think about just this total blackout for an 8-hour period, I mean, there's obviously going to be like a fear factor for people.
Oh, chaos.
Like think of this like nuclear winter scenario. I mean, crops would fail, livestock would die, water, what's left of it, would probably freeze. And then it says that these trumpet judgments get suspended to allow for this other warning to come to earth before the fifth, sixth, and seventh trumpets come. And it comes and says like, whoa, whoa, whoa to the earth, like preparing the earth. And we've talked about before, like to repeat something three times is to declare it to its maximum. So that's what happens. So now we move into the fifth trumpet, which is our first woe judgment. And this is called demonic scorpions. So what happens is it says that there's this demon that receives the keys to the bottomless pit. Now, under the earth, we've talked before, is Sheol, and that was split into two places. One, Hades, or hell, and the other was the bosom of Abraham, which is empty now. That's where Old Testament saints went. When Jesus died and he descended into the middle of the earth, he went there because their souls couldn't go into the throne room yet because Christ hadn't come to spiritually die on the cross for us yet. So Christ goes down, you know, ministers to the Old Testament saints. And then when he comes up 3 days later, he brings their souls. He also goes over to Hades and is just like, hey, I'm the dude that you all didn't believe in. So in Hades, there is another portion that is carved out. And that's often called the abyss or the bottomless pit or the deep, whenever you see that in scripture. And that was like a place for demons, like ones that were particularly evil. They would get cast into this place to be confined for a time. So we're told this demon receives the keys to this bottomless pit. And out of the smoke, it says it comes like these locusts on the earth and powers given to them, like scorpions on the earth. It says that they're told not to hurt the grass or anything green or trees, but only men who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads. They're not permitted to kill anyone. All they can do is torment, and they're given five months to just torment. And it says their torment is like a scorpion when it stings a man. And it also says, in those days, men will seek death but not find it. So I guess for me, like, I don't know if it's just like one sting from a scorpion or if it's just like you just feel that repetitively over and over and like you just want to die, but you're so debilitated that you don't even have the ability to just like kill yourself. Yeah. But it says like men will seek death and they won't find it.
I think so I've heard people use that phrase too, like talking about end times, like when they're referring to like transhumanism, you know, like putting yourself up in the matrix. Like I saw an article, like you may be able to live to 150 in the metaverse or whatever. And someone used that phrase, but I didn't mean, I've heard that phrase before.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So they, and won't even be able to kill themselves. And then the sixth trumpet is our second woe judgment. And it says that there's a great army of horsemen, and it gives a number, 200 million. They'll be led by four demons who have been prepared for the hour and the day, and they will kill a third of humanity, of what's left.
Damn, a demon army, dude?
Demon army will kill a third of humanity of what's left. Oh, my
God.
And it's at this point that we finally reach like the first 3.5 years of tribulation. Like we finally get to this halfway point.
Okay.
And at this point, I mean, 50% of the population is gone of what's left after the rapture. So 50% of whoever was left here, they're gone. A third of the earth is uninhabitable. A third of the bodies of water, you can't navigate them and you can't even drink them. And that's not even the worst to come. And so then we take like this break here to talk about this moment in mid-tribulation. And again, even though it's just like this small moment that divides these 2 3.5 year periods, there's just so much stuff that happens there. So in chapter, I'll explain chapter 12, because that's going to be the end of this mid-tribulation point, but that's where the dragon is. So I know like that's the cool part. So I want to explain that.
No, this whole thing's been cool. So, but it add a dragon, it just makes it even cooler. So awesome.
So obviously the dragon is going to be Satan. And when it talks about this woman giving birth, a lot of people think of birth as like a baby.
Yeah.
But that's not the context for it. So the woman that it's referring to, because it talks about the woman and the dragon. So the woman is Israel. Okay. Christ is the Messiah. The dragon is waiting for the Messiah to devour the Messiah. And that's what he, you know, when Christ was here on earth, Satan, you know, he's like, oh, I'm going to turn his people against him and have them killing. Like that was his plan. He didn't know that was God's plan. He thought that was his plan.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. So there's a period when Jesus is hanging on the cross and all of a sudden these people are like, they're like, oh, isn't this the guy that was saving people? Like, why doesn't God save him now? Why doesn't he just get himself off the cross? If he's really the Messiah, why wouldn't he do that? And even the Jewish leaders are saying the same thing, which, I mean, doesn't even make sense. Like if the testhood of being the Messiah was being able to overcome the things that he was going through, why would he have gone through any of it? Like even if he had gotten off the cross, like he still would have been a pretty pathetic Messiah.
Yeah.
Like right. Why not stop the scourging? I mean, he was scourged to the point that he was disfigured. It said he looked like something out of a horror movie. You couldn't even look at him and recognize who he was. Like, why didn't he stop it before then? Why is getting off the cross the thing for them? And, you know, like you imagine Satan, like sitting back and realizing like with one word, Jesus could have got off the cross, but he's not getting off the cross. And so then all of a sudden Satan's like, maybe I overplayed my hand a little bit here. What's happening? So he starts moving through the crowd and tempting the crowd, just like he tempted Christ for 40 days, he's trying to tempt Jesus to get off the cross because nothing held Jesus there. Jesus held himself there.
Yeah.
At 3 p.m., he said, Father, I command my spirit into your hand. Like he laid down his own life. He had no sin, So if the wages of sin is death, if you have no sin, ergo you have no death. So Christ laid down his life, commanded his spirit out of him, but Satan realized, oh, I may have made a mistake here, and starts trying to tempt the crowds into what's happening. So that's why it says like he's waiting to devour him. Well, when you get into the 10 spikes and then, or the 10 horns and then three of them being gone and another horn comes up, that yeah. goes back to the book of Daniel. So the 10 horns represent those 10 world leaders that we talked about that have to come into play.
Right.
The book of Daniel tells us at some point, which this is the point mid-tribulation, the Antichrist will rise up, overthrow three of them, like will kill three of them, to take his stake as a position of authority, and then the other seven will be rulers with him. But you still have the 10 heads and you still have the 10 crowns because you still have 10 territories. It's just now you only have seven rulers, and then you have the main ruler, which is the Antichrist. So that's all that's happening there with the dragon and stuff. I told you it was going to be Antichrist.
Oh, dude, it's still crazy, dude. For so sure. The Antichrist, he would be in charge of, he's in charge of all of the 10, or no? Is that what you're saying, or no?
No, so he has political power, but it's at this mid-tribulation point that he overthrows three of them.
Okay.
Rises to power himself, and the remaining seven just kind of follow and lead as,
I see.
As like his top people.
Interesting. Got it.
So, you know, cliff note version of mid-tribulation, there's a temple in Israel, there's people worshiping there. So that suggests to us that God has been sparing Israel from all of these disasters that have been happening. And now there's two prophets that have been at the temple. They've been prophesying for the last 3.5 years. They have supernatural powers because they've been able to prevent their enemies from harming them. They are the two olive trees and the two lampstands before the Lord that the book of Zechariah talks about.
Huh.
Their ministry has a worldwide impact. They're hated by most people because the world assumes that all the bad stuff is happening because of them. But God had appointed them to warn the world during this first 3.5 year period. And so as they finish their testimony at this mid-tribulation point, God allows them to be killed by the beast, which we know is the Antichrist. And at that point, it's the Antichrist being indwelled by Satan that kills them. So after they're killed, their bodies actually remain visible in the city for 3 days. Everybody celebrates their death. They're super happy about it. But then we're told after 3.5 days, the breath of life comes back into them. They stand up on their feet. They hear a voice from heaven that says, come up here. And then they are taken away in a cloud. All right. So we talked about the kingdoms that are happening. Now, the second part of chapter 12. Right now, even to this day, you can look at the book of Job, Satan and his demons, they have access to heaven. Because in the book of Job, when Christ says, or when God, you know, like calls everybody and asks Satan, he's like, hey, what have you been up to? Like he didn't know. But that's taking place in heaven. So at this point, at this mid-tribulation point, the second part of chapter 12, it talks about the archangel Michael and the other angels, like they cast Satan and his followers out of heaven. So they lose access to heaven at that point. Now, Satan still thinks that he can win because he has access to heaven. So he has this false perception of being able to win. And the reason why God hasn't cast him out before then is because Satan, he gets big mad and starts freaking out when he gets cast out. And that's like we see the events of that in the next 3.5 years.
Okay.
So he gets cast out from heaven, and that's when he just like freaks out. thinks that he, you know, is like, okay, well, I'm going to end up losing this. So what am I going to do? So at this point, there's also other things happening. Like in the second 3.5 years, there's not going to be any new believers. Like at this point, things are going to be happening where it's like, you're either team God or you're team Antichrist. Like which one
right,
are you going to be? Satan mimics God by developing his own counterfeit mark. Remember, God had put a mark on those 144,000. And so this counterfeit mark is the 666. So by adding up the letters in a person's Hebrew name, you can arrive at a single value. So for example, if we add the Hebrew letters.
Say that again. Say that again real quick.
If you add up the letters in a person's Hebrew name, you can arrive at a single value.
Okay.
Okay. So for example, if we take Jesus the Messiah, you would arrive at 749. Now, again, that only works like in their Hebrew. So again, the number 6 in the Bible is a number for fallen or sinful man. So in Hebrew writing, to double means more and to triple means most. So 666 is the most or most sinful man.
Got it.
But also the Hebrew name for this person will equal 666. Just like the 749 equals Jesus the Messiah. Okay.
Dang, dude.
And he's not done being a copycat. He raises up another person to display these supernatural powers and signs called the false prophet. So now Satan has his false mark to mimic God's mark. And now he has his own counterfeit trinity. He has Satan, the Antichrist, and the false prophet.
Wow.
And then this is where the world gets put into a few different camps. So there's going to be a principal group of believers, both Jews and Gentiles. The Jewish people will be in Batra or Petra. If you look that up, it looks like something out of Indiana Jones. It's pretty cool. So the Jews will be in Petra, and they're not going to face any persecution. God's going to protect them. In Petra, you can see what that looks like. It's really awesome. The Gentiles who are believers, they will face persecution. So you have, there it is. So that's Petra or Batra, and that's where the believing Jewish people, God will protect them and hold them there. They will not suffer persecution for the remaining 3.5 years.
Okay.
But the Gentile people will. Believers will suffer persecution. So you have that. You have people that will take the mark. You have the 144,000 Jewish evangelists. They are 100% martyred. So they do not survive tribulation. And at this point, because there's not going to be any new believers, so at this point, their souls are the ones that are in the throne room under the altar that John saw earlier. You get an angel that comes and he preaches the entire gospel, kind of like a final altar call to everybody. There's a second angel that comes, announces Babylon as the enemy kingdom. And then there's a third angel that just declares that anyone that doesn't heed the call to believe in the gospel and takes the mark that they will be tormented forever. And we learn believers who live to the end of tribulation. So people that are alive, believe it or not, people that survive the second half of tribulation who are believers, which will be like both the Jewish people that are in Petra and then any of the Gentiles that survive, that they will enter into the millennial kingdom in their natural bodies. So we know that part of our eternal reward during the millennial kingdom is we will have some type of government position. Now, not like government we have now. We're talking about like Christ's government. So it's going to be
awesome.
opposite of government we have now.
Yeah.
So since they're entering in their natural bodies, they won't have a government position, so to speak. And then finally, we are told that angels will reap believers through martyrdom. And when you think about reaping something, I mean, that's, I mean, the Grim Reaper, I mean, you've seen the big hook, yeah, and when you're going, right, through fields and you're reaping stuff, I mean, you're picking it up in bundles and bushes. So it just speaks to the level of martyrdom that happens during, okay, this. And so then that ends mid-tribulation. So that's a lot of stuff that happened.
Dude, that was everything. That was tons.
In this like period that just separates these 2 years. And so then you get your seventh trumpet, which starts your seven bowl judgment. So at the sound, okay, of the seventh trumpet, then these bowl judgments, these are the final wrath of God. These bowl judgments, they're poured out on the earth. So the first bowl, it says that God takes away man's physical comfort with loathsome sores. So like just these evil, wicked, like disruption of your flesh in unimaginable ways. And then the second bowl, it says that God puts an end to all sea life by making all the seas turn to blood. So besides like the uncountable number of dead and rotting fish, the blood itself would begin to congeal, if you think about it, would become putrid, would shut down the water cycle, so there's not going to be any rain. Then it says the fresh water also turns to blood. And these blood judgments, they're a repayment for the world pouring out the blood of the saints. And really, I mean, just after those first three bowls, I mean, the end is within days, because you can't live many days without water.
Right.
So then the fourth bowl judgment, it says the sun becomes increasingly hot to the point that it burns men and burns the earth. So the people that are here, except for the ones being spared in Petra, like you have sores, there's no water. The earth probably stinks really bad from all of the like congealed blood and dead fish. And now everything is like scorching hot. And then the fifth bowl judgment, it says the earth is cast into darkness, and that the darkness is so intense that it causes unbearable pain. And when you think about like, how does darkness lead to pain? It's not just meaning like a lack of physical light, but also spiritual light. You know, when Jesus was on the cross, from 12 to 3, the entire earth experienced darkness. And the symbolism behind that was God had removed his presence from the sun. Now, I mean, if you're wondering like how God can be separated from God, raise your hand, join the club. I mean, I think on a good day, some people would probably struggle to explain how the Trinity works, let alone how God can be separated from God. But we're just told that that's what happens.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's what, even for a non-believer, like your extended common grace. So imagine just like no hope whatsoever, like not just the physical darkness, but the spiritual darkness as well, like not even feeling like you had anything to hope for. So those are all done. There's only two judgments left. And they really seem insignificant compared to everything else that is happening. The first of those two, we call this the climax of the War of Armageddon, and it has multiple stages.
Oh my God, the war's still going on?
The War of Armageddon.
Who's even fighting in this thing?
It's not just a single military engagement. It's a series of events over weeks.
Gosh, okay, dude.
So because the sixth bowl judgment is just that the Euphrates River dries up.
Okay.
That doesn't really sound like a judgment. The point of it is to make a way for the Antichrist and the seven kings that are left for them to travel to head towards where the final battle place is going to be.
Oh my God, a final battle. Holy.
So they are going to gather their forces in this place, and the Hebrew name for that is Har Megiddo. Now, the word Har in Hebrew is just a hill or a mountain, and Megiddo is the name of the city. So its literal translation is Hill of Megiddo. But because we speak English and we like to butcher stuff, instead of calling it Har Megiddo, we arrive at Armageddon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So yeah, the whole time we've been just saying like a hill of Magento, but you know, we call it Armageddon.
That's funny, that's dude.
So Satan and his followers, knowing their time is short, they're determined to kill Christ at the moment of his return. So they gather there because they're like, this is where he's going to come. And when he gets here, we're going to kill him. And this war of Armageddon, like it unfolds throughout like these five different stages. But then finally we get the seventh bowl and it says it's poured into the air, which results in an earthquake that produces a unique destruction unlike any earthquake ever. So the damage of this earthquake is going to be on par with the flood that happened, only without water, obviously, because there's none left. So it says like mountains are gone, islands are gone, continents are ripped apart. And it says the great city, Babylon, is destroyed. There's the removal of all Gentile nations, 100-pound rock, 100-pound rocks fall to earth.
Holy crap.
And so as the final judgment comes, it says there's a voice from the temple that says it's done, which just means that it's accomplished in Greek. All right. So like all of the seals have been broken. All of the judgments have happened. The thing that's getting ready to happen next is Christ is going to return. And I just want to like touch on like why Babylon has to be the bad guy city. Well, that's where the Garden of Eden was. Okay, that's where Satan's jealousy over creation of man and woman led him to attack Adam to bring sin into the world. That's the source of idolatry. That's where the Tower of Babel was that started idolatry. Like the tower was the first false religion, the first Gentile kingdom to conquer the nation of Israel, and the city of Jerusalem was were the Babylonians. That's where the Antichrist takes up his seat of power during tribulation. The enemy's counterfeit religion began in the garden. It took shape at Babel and eventually gave birth to, like it says, uncountable numbers of children. I mean, look today at the smorgasbord of religions, of religious choices that the enemy has proliferated with, with lies.
Dude, that like explains so much, like about, you know, like our we always talk about like the ancient Babylon religion and like secret societies, and so when you say this and like the in Revelation, does it mean like current day, like what, Iraq or whatever?
Yeah.
Wow. Dude.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the Mesopotamia area.
Damn, crazy, yeah, absolutely. Dude. That just absolutely. Is crazy.
Yeah, and so all of those false religions, like, you know, that just plays into Satan's advantage because it camouflages the truth, which, you know, we're always trying to find out what that is, but it camouflages it. And then it perpetuates the myth that there are many roads to heaven instead of just one. So yeah, at this point in Revelation, there's just the two cities that are standing with all the bold judgments and stuff gone. So the only thing is just the final battle, and that's 19 through 22 in Revelation, man.
So this battle, after the battle ends, that's when we have that like 1,000 year where I'm going to get to be like a secretary in the government.
Yeah, absolutely. So it says Christ comes back and he's on a white horse with a name that nobody knows. So even the name that we call him today, that's not going to be his name.
Okay.
And it talks about, you know, describes the people that are coming with him, the army that's with him. And I'll just let you know, we are that army that is coming back with him. But it's funny we're called an army because we don't do any fighting.
Okay.
So we come back, and the first place that Christ goes is not to Jerusalem. He goes to Bozrah to be able to save the Jewish people that are there. And then he heads to Jerusalem. That's why he is described as having blood on his robes, because he just defeated the enemy there before coming into Jerusalem. And then like that battle is super short because it says he defeats the enemy with his word. And you know, that's it. The people that die, it said that, I mean, like their corpses and stuff just split open, and it's so quick and violent that the blood released, it says it fills the Kidron Valley flowing 200 miles.
Wow.
Man. Like that's just like it's blood. Done. And it leaves a huge mess, but God has a way to clean it up. Like the birds are going to fly in and like feast off of all of the dead people. There's a 75-day interval to kind of like clean up the earth and get everything ready before this final period. Satan is cast into the bottomless pit for 1,000 years. And we had talked about, you know, entering into this millennial kingdom, and you had, I mean, there's still Jews and Gentiles that are believers that are in their natural sinful body.
Yeah.
So without Satan and any of his demons to help, like sin doesn't get a root and grow. Like there's still sin, and that's where we come in, because we like have righteous judgment over sin and things like that. But sin doesn't get a root like it does today, because Satan isn't here. So all judgment is righteous, so to speak, upon people. And so then that happens for 1,000 years. And then I guess just the, for time's sake, for the super short version of it. So for us, our judgment period is more of a period. It's not going to be a judgment period for like unbelievers.
Okay.
So after this 1,000-year period, the Antichrist and the false prophet, they are already in the lake of fire. Satan is released. He has this period where once again, he tries to like muster up this army for one last attack. They are all just mopped out by fire. And it's done. Satan is judged, cast into the lake of fire. And then it says that the books are present and open. I don't know if the books are every bad thing that any unbeliever's ever done. If it's the law that Moses wrote, because by definition, if you broke one law, then like that's all it's got to be is just one law.
Yeah.
As an unbeliever, and then you're judged by God. But it says in this moment when this happens, it says this earth flees. And the word that is used for flee is the same one that Mark used to pretty much describe, like, imagine you were naked in a field and a bunch of people walked into the field and you were like, oh, I wasn't expecting these people. And you took off running away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it says, that's how fast this earth flees. So we're just like occupying this space for this judgment. It doesn't say, again, like, I don't know if it's like this person comes forward and everything is read, or if everybody is there. And it's just as they start reading the law, because everybody's familiar with the Ten Commandments, but I mean, they had 311 laws.
Oh.
So outside of the popular Ten Commandments, like there's still 301 other laws that are out there. So if you break one of them, then that's all that it would really need. So I don't know, you know, how long that period would take. I mean, we're really not going to care.
Right.
Anyway, and then it says there's a new heaven and a new earth for us. There's not going to be any sun. There's not a sun that's there, because, you know, the sun and the moon and the stars for us now, like they're used to tell time and count seasons.
Right.
Stuff like that. It says God's going to be the light for us in the temple. There's not going to be any darkness. We will count months, because it says there's a river that flows out of the middle of the city. And the tree of life grows like on both sides of the river, and each month it produces a new fruit. And so we will like have a new fruit each month. So we'll be able to do that. And I know somebody's going to be like, well, if we can count the months, then can't we count a year? Well, this is going to be for an eternity, so you're not really going to care. But we're also told that there are 12 gates into the new Jerusalem. And that's where the pearly gates come from, because it says each gate is made of a single pearl. So there's no pearly gates in heaven. The pearly gates are in the New Jerusalem.
Ah.
And those are there, again, as a way for us to remember. So each of the 12 gates is for the 12 tribes of Israel. And then the city of Jerusalem is built on 12 different layers, and those represent the 12 apostles. We have the fruit that we can do. And so all of that, like, that's for us to remember that life comes from God. Because, you know, if we were still in the Garden of Eden today, let's just say that, you know, Adam didn't sin and we're still in the Garden of Eden today. I mean, we would understand God's goodness to an extent, but I mean, how can you really understand love if you don't understand hate? How can you understand light if you haven't experienced darkness? You know, how can you understand righteous judgment if you don't have an understanding of a broken and fallen world?
Right.
So since this is going to be eternity for us, then we have these things set in place so that we will be able to remember those.
That makes sense.
As we live in eternity. Yeah.
Because if you didn't know, but like you said, you wouldn't cherish it or honor it or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And then, you know, that's kind of it. And then at the end of it, you know, John puts a thing in there that just says, pretty much don't add anything to this book or take anything away from it.
No,
meaning the whole Bible. So,
wow, dude, do you think, so one question that someone asked in the chat was, do you think the Antichrist has been born yet or is like here, or do you not delve too much into the, I know that's like, I don't know if that's an area that you think about or whatever.
I guess I wonder about that. Like, how close are we? You know, I've been doing a study on Matthew 27 and 28. Actually have some of those up on my podcast I started because of your inspiration.
Oh,
good. And so we can back into and know that Christ died on April 10th of 27 AD. So the 2000 year anniversary for Christ's death will be, I think, April 22nd of 2027.
Because that
is based on a lunar calendar.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know if anything special is going to happen that year. Yeah. I mean, 2000 year anniversary of that. So I don't know if anything crazy is going to happen that year or not. I don't like make any speculation for that.
Right. So, yeah, but that's very interesting.
I don't know if that person's born already, if they're already like in some kind of political power or affiliation or what it is. I guess for me, like, I just take courage in knowing that I am not going to be here when any of this stuff happens. So I like to understand it because it gives me a sense of urgency to try to share the message with as many people as I can.
Yeah.
Because I don't want them, I mean, like, especially that second 3.5 years, like, that's kind of a preview of what people are going to experience for all eternity, you know, without coming to know Christ. And I don't, like, you can't hate anybody enough to want them to have to experience that for eternity.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't, you know, like the thief on the cross. I mean, he was making fun of Jesus 1 second, and then the next, you know, he was declaring that he was Messiah. And I mean, I think that's the cool thing for all of us is when we come to Christ, man, like, he doesn't be like, oh, well, 5 seconds ago, like, you were talking smack about me.
Yeah.
Or anything like that. Like, I mean, it is what it is. Like, he knows your repentant heart and goes from there. So, you know, just trying to share this with everybody and give a sense of urgency to them. But yeah, I mean, I often wonder, like, man, is this person already like in a political position now? Mm-hmm. Are they born yet? Like, you know, I think it's human nature to be curious about that stuff.
Well, and like, what also like brought me back to like Christianity was reading all this stuff about these Babylon religions and how much value they, I mean, they clearly worship, like, they don't worship the Bible, but they use this information and act a different way or whatever, not the opposite technically, like, all the time, but That, like, because clearly they believe in the opposite. Their goal is pushing the unbiblical things or unholy things. And mm-hmm. so it would not be surprising at all that they, if they, you know, because they're always trying to create, they're trying to like force the prophecy at hand, at least in my opinion.
And yeah.
So it would not surprise me at all that they have identified possibilities of these characters through Kabbalah, through like gematria or whatever tactics they use, birth times. And yeah.
I mean, it's wild. I mean, you, like, if you understand just how much evil and stuff there is in the world and just how much, like, some of these people, like, manipulation and stuff like that, it's just, I think I heard somebody say once, like, there can't be this much evil without, like, the equal or greater good.
Right.
Than what the amount of evil is that's here. I mean, I think we talked last time, like, if you look up where the Pope preaches from in the Vatican, like, it looks like he's standing in a snake's mouth, you know, with the fangs hanging down. And I mean, we all know what the serpent represents biblically. Right. So it's just, you know, like, you look at some of that stuff and you're just, it's like, how do people just like make excuses for it or not see it? Like, how do you not understand just how like dark some of this stuff is? Is it just because of their title or that they're a quote unquote religious or spiritual person? Like, that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Cain and Abel, like Adam and Eve's first kids, like you would think if anybody was going to be like love God more than anybody, it would be Adam and Eve's kids. Like they got to hear from mom and dad, like all the cool stuff that God could do. But yet Cain looked in his, you know, Satan thought that Cain was going to be the one to crush his head from the judgments that happened. So he started tempting him. Cain is technically your very first unbeliever and just felt like his relationship with God was a give and take thing. Like, okay, I'll bring you this sacrifice and you just take care of me. But he didn't bring a sin sacrifice because he just thought the relationship was an exchange and then got jealous and then murdered his brother. Mm-hmm. So, you know, ever since from then, like, you know, Satan's end game is just to, you know, delude the truth and, you know, try to get everybody to believe in literally anything except the gospel message. Like, it doesn't matter how many religions there are or what people do or what they believe in, as long as they're not believing in the gospel, then, you know, he's fine with that.
So I got two other, I don't want to keep, we'll finish in like 10 minutes. So I got two questions. So
okay.
One question was, I don't know if you watch, so I did a show on the Jesuits, like these, all these shows and about the symbolism. So like the kind of like how you're saying what the Pope stands in the snake thing, like how the eagle is Jupiter's mascot. And like a lot of churches, they sit on eagle lecterns, which, you know, is weird. And why an eagle? Like, it doesn't matter what denomination. I look like there's tons. But then also was in Jeremiah, it said, like, you shall not depict graven images. Do you know that Bible verse?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What does that Bible verse mean?
So, you know, talking about the graven images, like when Moses was on Mount Sinai, and he's getting the law, you know, the people, they created this golden cow, not to start a new religion, but they just wanted to have an image. Like, they wanted to have something tangible to be able to worship. Right. Like, they still believed in God. They knew that he had brought them out of Egypt, but Moses was gone. And that was like their tangible, like that was their person. And so they just like, because that's what they were used to in Egypt, because Egypt always had all of these tangible symbols and things that you could, you know, visually look at and see and be able to worship. And so that's what they wanted to revert back to. You know, they did a lot of things. Like, God didn't want them to have any kings. He wanted to be their king. They were the ones that wanted kings, and look at how that turned out for them. So them wanting to not just embrace God and trust him and follow him, But it was more like, okay, well, we understand this, but we're also used to these things. So we would like to also like just keep those because that's what we're comfortable with.
Okay. So like the point, so like, you know how people wear Jesus on the like necklaces on the cross, that's like forbidden in the Bible, right?
Well, I think that depends on, again, examining the heart for that. You know, people that wear like a cross as a necklace, I mean, are they like kissing it and worshiping it and like holding it every time they pray, where it's okay, like that's the thing that they're actually worshiping?
I see.
Instead of just God? Or is it, you know, I have this thing, it's a reminder for me for the sacrifice he made for me. Maybe somebody will ask me about it. I'll have an opportunity to minister to them. So, you know, obviously it's going to be different depending on the person. But again, at the end of the day, it's just more of where their heart is and what their intent is behind it.
Interesting. That was a great explanation, dude. That helped, because that Jesuit book I read, that author talked about that like the whole time, like how he said that if you, you know, depict these images, God says something in another verse, like, or not, I don't know if it was God, if it's in the Bible or if it's like an early church father, but they say you'll be worshiping something else, not God. And that's why he said that the early church fathers said, do not, like in the first and second century, do not depict any images because of that. And then the point he was making was like how like the Catholic Church, all those statues in Italy and stuff like that, those statues were made during pagan Rome. And like the queen of heaven is Isis or Ishtar. Yeah. And then Mary, they just said, nope, this is Mary now. And then they even started calling her the queen of heaven, which was the pagan phrase for Ishtar or Isis.
Yeah. I mean like the church that we go to, like there's no crosses hanging up anywhere. There's no Ten Commandments hanging up anywhere. You know, which is crazy because I'm not Catholic, but for a point in time, like I went to a Catholic school and I mean, like they got crucifix hanging up everywhere and statues of Mary and stuff like that. And I was listening to a guy one time, he was talking about the crucifixion process and he was like, first of all, the crucifix, like they were only maybe 6 or 7 feet off the ground because like it didn't benefit the Romans to have to lift anybody higher off the ground than what was needed to kill them. He goes, and also they didn't crucify anybody with their clothes on. He goes, but no church wants to put a naked Jesus up in their church. So, you know, they're just using the, again, the symbolism and the things that is beneficial to them. And not, you know, kind of not sticking with the biblical stuff. So again, you know, just somebody examining their heart. I mean, you know, are you getting a cross tattoo so that you can, you know, worship the tattoo that's on your body, or are you getting it like as a remembrance, or, you know,
that's a good answer, dude.
Something that stays with you. Yeah.
That's a good. All right. And then my last question. So you kind of already answered it. So I think after reading all this time and like looking at all forms of government, and my conclusion I came to was that like possibly the monarchy was the best form of government for the people. And so I got in like a debate with my good friend who's you should talk to him, John from We've Read the Documents. Have you sent you guys? You would love to, you guys have a good conversation, but John, he also agreed with me. He's a really smart guy and he agree with me. And then he said, he just brought up what you brought up when I talked about it recently. He said, it's not, cause he went at the time when he agreed, he said, yeah, it's like biblical to have a king. And now, and then he brought up that story. I forget who was the king was it in Jerusalem that they said, we want a king like the pagan people have. And God then set the Babylonians and
it was the Israelites. Like once they got into the promised land, then it was like, ooh, we want a ruler. And God is kind of like, okay, I'll volunteer. Like I'm supposed to be your ruler. But they wanted, again, like a tangible person to be able to look at. Like they had Moses, they had Joshua, like they wanted somebody that could tell them what to do. And so, you know, finally, you know, God raised up a king for them. And then, you know, really after Solomon, I mean, Solomon asked to be the wisest king. Like, that was the thing that he wanted, and God had granted him that. And where Solomon messed up is he allowed one of his wives to start bringing in, like,
Jezebel,
her pagan, yes, to start bringing in, like, her pagan stuff or whatever. And that was, like, again, going back to the Garden of Eden, it was just like, you can do all of this stuff, just don't do this one thing. And that was that one thing.
Ah.
And that's really when, like, from a king standpoint, that things started to go downhill. Like, you had significantly more evil kings than you did good kings. I mean, the book of Judges is just like a big circle. Like, God's people don't do what they tell him to do. So then they get captured or suppressed by a group of people. They, woe is me, return back to God. God raises somebody up to save them and to rule over them. And then that lasts for a little bit. And then eventually, like, you have somebody else come into power. And I mean, it just, like, keeps going around in a circle for them, all because they wanted to have a king.
Well, so that's, again, that's a great answer and gives me some hope that, because he would give a king.
Yeah. And then eventually, you know, from the Babylonian Empire, I mean, that's the last time we see the Ark of the Covenant. The cherubim that are in the throne room in chapter 4 of Revelation, the last time we saw them was in the book of Ezekiel, when they go into Solomon's temple and remove the Ark of the Covenant before the Babylonians come into it. So it's kind of ironic that before the age of the Gentile begins, the Ark of the Covenant gets removed.
Yeah.
And then we don't see these, we don't see them again until, you know, at this tribulation point when the age of the Gentiles is coming to an end.
Huh. Interesting. And then he had a question. I don't know what this means, but he wanted me to ask you. He said it was wondering why Lucifer was said to be called Samael before his fall.
That is an excellent question. When I don't know the answer.
And someone else said that, Josh, that's an awesome effing question.
That is an awesome question.
Probably a hard one to answer.
Yeah, so, I'll have to look into that. I haven't been asked that before. That's an awesome question.
All right. Well, so sorry we just played it, but I know Brandon will find the answer for us.
I will.
Well, dude, so tell that this was an amazing episode. We'll have to do it. You'll have to tell me another topic that I can learn more Bible stuff with you. But
okay.
Where can everyone find you, listen to you? You started a podcast, which is awesome.
I did. Due to your encouragement, I started one. Yeah. The podcast is called Just One Man. So the number one, so just, and then the number one man all together. And really the idea behind that is just taking, you know, these Sunday school stories that we all grew up with, but then, like, nobody ever taught us anything more than that. And let's just face it. I was lazy. So I just took them for face value and never jumped into them. So the point of that is to take, you know, some popular Sunday school lessons and really dive into them to understand, like, why do we need to know that? Why does it matter? So I've got 7 episodes out right now. I did a 3-part series on creation. So it covers Genesis.
That'll be our next show. Awesome.
Genesis 1 and 2. And then I was going to jump into, like, the fall of man, but since Easter's coming up, I'm also doing a study on Matthew chapter 27 and 28. So I just went ahead and started with that. So I have 4 episodes up of that, talking about Jesus's final hours, going through there. So, you know, talks about Judas, Christ's time on the cross, what that meant, what it represented, how we know that he died on a Thursday and not a Friday, you know, going through that. So I'll record the last episode of it next week, but the good stuff for those is up.
Oh, dude, I'm so proud of you for starting the show, dude. You put so much work in this, so you need to share it, like, your wealth of knowledge, dude, because most are like me and should read the Bible and don't. It's written so I can't read it at night because I don't know what the heck is it saying. So awesome, dude. So I'll put your show link in the show notes and your Twitter handles and whatever. And dude, it was an awesome, people loved it. So that was a great show, dude. So thank you.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
We're doing the creation next. So we'll talk soon. You have a good night. Thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll see each other soon, I'm sure. All right, dude. Peace.
See you, man.